following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
Since March 2007, one online audio production group has pushed the boundaries.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents Maudlin.
It's Sounding Board. Audio drama with Lumpy Bits.
You have been listening to Jake Sanson.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents
My Name is Feedback, and these are my stories.
Last time on Gaia's Voyages.
This is the Broken Sea Audio production of Escape from New York.
OTR Swag Cast.
Doctor Who, starring Mark Kalita as the Doctor.
BrokenSea.com. New audio every Thursday.
What kind of author does it take to combine the gridiron intensity of Any Given Sunday, the space opera epic feel of Star Wars, and the crime-ridden underworld of The Godfather? It would take an author with balls. Footballs. New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler has the biggest balls of all in his novel, The Rookie, a high-octane mashup of sports, sci-fi, and crime fiction. Set in the lethal Pro Football League 700 years in the future, aliens and humans alike play positions based on physiology. Thrilled to receivers that jump 25 feet into the air, linemen that bench press 1,200 pounds, and linebackers that literally want to eat you. Organized crime runs every franchise. Games are fixed and rival players are assassinated. Follow the story of Quentin Barnes, a 19-year-old quarterback prodigy who's been raised all of his life to hate and kill those aliens. Quentin must deal with his racism and learn to lead, or he'll wind up just another stat in the column marked Killed on the Field. Order your copy now at scottsigler.com/therookie. This is a limited edition, individually numbered hardcover with an embossed cover and 8 color pages inside. Only 3,000 copies will be printed. So order early before the season's over and they're all gone. The Rookie is suitable for ages 11 and up.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production, OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swag Cast. Tonight, I'm just in a Rod Serling kind of mood, so I've got 3 episodes of The Zero Hour, each a one-off self-contained adventure, which are freaky and cool. Hope you enjoy. Not to mention a new Avengers serial and episode 2 of Bury Your Dead in Arizona from I Love a Mystery. Enjoy!
Listening to The Zero Hour. Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination. Today, Keith Walker's gothic tale of revenge. The Ghost of the Black Plague. Starring Monty Martin. In the Mutual Broadcasting System presentation of The Zero Hour.
brought to you by the Ford Motor Company and Lazy Boy Recliners. This is the Zero Hour on Mutual Radio.
This is Jim Backus with news about the most comfortable experience of a lifetime, a Lazy Boy reclining chair. It's ideal for apartments, living rooms, dens, family rooms. Lazy Boy is as beautiful as it is comfortable. Available in any style you can imagine and in hundreds of decorator fabrics and vinyls. Make your favorite room a haven of gracious living. See your Lazy Boy dealer today. Hurry up. He's waiting. Run down there. Go. Yes, indeed.
In a few moments, you and I will step back in time, 200 years, to the idyllic countryside of Brookfield, England. A place about to be transformed into a vale of tears. The Black Plague will lay itself across this fertile valley, bringing in its wake the emotions of great hate and great love. The lives of Lord Alexander Wells and his son Robert are shortly to be irrevocably changed by the revenge of the ghost of the Black Plague.
Basil, come quickly. My horse.
Yes, Master Wells.
Cool her down.
Oh, as always, Master.
Guy, Chad, this is a day of beauty. Look at the trees. It's as if they knew and shared my good fortune.
Look, Robert, you're back.
Ah, Sarah. Today is your birthday, is it not?
Yes, 14th. Soon I'll be old enough for you to propose.
No, I'm much too old for you.
Just a josh, Master Robert. I know I'm plain.
Nonsense, Sarah. You're really very beautiful. Now run along and tell your mother I am starved for some lunch.
Yes, sir.
And where's my father?
The library, sir. He's with Mr. Duncan.
Oh, well, I shall see if I can disturb their business. Happy birthday, Sarah.
Thank you. Mother, Master Robert is out and walk.
A scoundrel who cares not for the people. Out of my house. 1 week, do you hear? You will pay for this if it's the last thing I do.
Oh, Mr. Duncan, good afternoon.
Out of my way, boy.
Father, may I ask why you argued with Mr. Duncan?
No. Now, what did you want?
Well, I have news, sir. But it can wait.
Well, I have some that can't wait.
What news, sir?
I've just received a letter from my old friend, Dr. Zavala.
In America?
Yes. I wrote him regarding the possibility of your entering the Boston University of Medicine, and he has agreed.
But that's marvelous.
Yes, and I hope you'll be pleased. Your leave is week's end.
But my news, Father, it has a bearing on the future. You see, Lorraine Duncan has consented to be my wife.
What? That trollop? No, I forbid it.
Now, she is not a trollop. Because she is of a different station, you have no right to look down on her.
I said it is forbidden. Besides, I have just evicted her.
So that was what the argument was all about. Father, I don't understand.
She will not wear the name of Wells.
Then I'm afraid I must go against your wishes.
No, you will not. Now, we'll not talk about this again. Oh, my Lord, come quick. It's your son, Master Michael.
What is it?
The boy said he collapsed by the pond. He looks very sick, and he's having the most terrible fit.
It was the plague, sir. The Black Death.
Oh, my God, no.
My lord, if I may, is it true you plan to send your son to America?
Yes.
Then I would do it right away, before he too succumbs.
Oh, my darling Robert, I do love you.
And I you, Lorraine.
Robert, you move forward. Miss Duncan, you'll have to leave now.
Goodbye, Robert.
No, not goodbye.
Come, my boy. Now, Robert, I want you to forget that girl.
Goodbye, Father.
I will write to you.
Robert, goodbye. My dear Robert, I'm writing this to you because my memories are flooded with your touch, your face, our happiness. I miss you so.
My dear,
we have moved away from Brookfield to another village.
It saddens me to tell you of this, but I fear your father will not speak of it to you. You have been gone less than a year, and the face of Brookfield has changed to the mask of death. The Black Plague has taken almost 300 of the villagers to God. And I know of no way to express my sorrow when I tell you that Lorraine Duncan and her mother were also taken.
Yes,
I was with the child and she died.
I'm grieved to tell you that much has changed here in Brookfield in the years that you've been gone. I know you will never forgive me for not allowing you to come home, but I still think it best that with only one more year to complete before you become a doctor, it is best...
I hope it is all right that I sent this. I chanced to find your address when I was cleaning your father's study and thought I would say good days to you. Things are strange here.
I have the most tragic news. Your father has taken his own life. We are at odds to explain this unhappy circumstance. Perhaps with your graduation only a week away, you could hasten home as soon as you can. I do not trust myself to outline it.
Dr. Robert Wells, Doctor of Medicine.
I appreciate your meeting. Please tell me exactly the circumstances of how my father died.
Well, you remember Samuel Duncan.
Yes, of course.
When the Black Death swept Brookfield, as you know, many people died. Among them, Duncan's entire family. He blamed their deaths on your father.
That's ridiculous.
Yes, but he swore that because of his reduced financial condition, he was unable to provide proper medical care for them. Thus, your father was responsible.
I see.
In the month before I wrote you, your father became very strange. He let the servants go and closed most of the house. He would see nobody, not even me. And then some of the villagers began to report odd happenings at night in the house. Screams, hammerings as if he were building something. That was what finally brought me to the manor. I found Lord Wells dead. Hanged, it seemed, by his own hand.
I never knew. He wrote nothing of this to me. Are you sure it was suicide?
Oh, yes. He left a note. It said quite simply that he could stand the pain no longer, that his guilt was too much, and this would end it all.
Ah, here we are. My God, the manor is a shambles.
Your father left no provisions for upkeep, but I did take the liberty of re-engaging Basil and Sarah.
Sarah? She's here?
Well, tomorrow, I believe. She came to me and asked if she might be re-employed. I knew you'd need a cook and someone to look after the house. I hope I did well.
No, absolutely. Thank you.
Well, I must be away before the storm. Are you quite sure you'll be all right tonight? Alone?
Yes, of course.
Well, call me if you need anything.
I will. And thank you again.
Hello.
What? I'm sorry, I...
Why, Lord Robert, you do not remember me?
Sarah.
Yes, sir.
But you were not due till the morning.
I thought with the storm coming, you would be in need of a warm supper, Lord Wells.
Sarah, it's amazing. You've blossomed to a real beauty.
Thank you, sir. You too are...
Yeah, I agree. I am something, changed anyway.
I'll just take these cases upstairs.
Well, thank you. I'll wander around a bit, I think.
Very good, sir. Dinner will be at 8.
Sarah, you spoil me with food like that.
Thank you. I'm very pleased. Robert, I have set a fire going in your room.
Good, I am all done in from the trip. Are you sure you'll be all right?
Oh, yes. Basil fixed the servants' quarters first thing. I'll be fine.
All right. Good night, then. What? What's that? Oh, I shudder.
Oh, Robert!
Oh, what now? Who's there? Sarah, is that you? Of course not. Sarah's clear the other side of the house.
Robert,
oh, the
devil. Help me.
Where is it? It's behind this wall. Oh, wait, where's Michael's room? I know his room is here somewhere.
Help me.
It's hollow.
Robert.
Why the devil would Father close this room over? A chair, I need something to break through with. Something. There.
Robert, come.
I'm coming. I'm coming. There. Who's here? Who's here, I say? No. No, it can't be.
Welcome home, my darling Robert.
Lorraine. Told me you had died. My Lorraine.
Yes, it is true. I am dead. But I returned, Robert. I loved you so.
Oh, Lorraine, I can't believe my eyes. Come here, let me touch you.
No, please stay away.
Lorraine, where are you? No, please. Please don't leave.
Here. Please stay over there.
Yes. I thought of you every day while I was in America.
I wanted so much for us to have a life together.
But there must be some way. You've come this far.
I am well here on the other side. It is peaceful, and I will rest now that I have seen you.
No, please, wait, wait.
I must leave again. I must. I am only allowed a little time, but I can return once more. Tomorrow night.
Lorraine, I'll be here.
At the same time, my darling.
Dr. Wells! Robert!
Please come in. Vicar, I must talk with you.
Certainly, my son. Sit down.
Yesterday you told me of the tragedy of the Duncan family. What happened to the father, Samuel?
But I thought someone might have told you he hung himself.
When?
Let me see. It was about 3 months ago.
Just before the strange happenings at the manor.
Why, yes.
Vicar, I received a visit from his daughter last night.
Lorraine Duncan? But the girl is dead.
Yes, that may well be, but I swear, I saw her. I talked with her. Vicar, have you never heard of something like that happening before?
Well, yes, but it's not generally accepted in clerical circles. Sometimes it has been said that great love or great hate will allow someone to return for a short time from the other side.
Yes, thank you.
Robert, please, you don't have to leave so quickly.
Yes, sir. Yes, I do. I must go to London and be back before dark.
Robert, I am here. My love, I can only stay a moment. There is not much strength left to hold me longer.
Lorraine, I have been studying today. I traveled to London and talked with a man who specializes in the black arts. He has told me that you can materialize here if you wish strongly enough.
He is wrong. I cannot. Oh, Robert, I want you so.
I don't know how to...
Robert, there is a way we can be together if you wish it.
Don't tell me anything, my darling.
Then you must take a poison. You can then join me. We will be together again.
Poison, yes. The man mentioned this, but he was unsure.
Do you love me, Robert?
Oh, yes.
Then do it. In a few moments, we could... We... No! I cannot! Father, I will not do this!
Fool! Gotten, you are a fool!
Samuel Duncan.
Yes, Robert Wells, it is I who have come from the depths. Do you want my daughter?
Oh, yes.
Then do as she asks. You will find a potion downstairs. Hurry.
No, Robert, you mustn't.
Why? Is that not what you want?
You forced me to do this. I am trapped. You will give me no peace.
is that the truth?
Forget her ravings! You must do this to be with her. Now hurry!
Robert! Robert, are you all right? Who is this?
Be gone, woman! This is no affair of yours!
Father! We must leave!
No, wait, Sarah. Why are you here?
I thought this was happened. Oh, Robert, late one night, just before your father died, I heard him. Duncan and your father were screaming at one another. That was the night before Lord Wells hanged himself.
It is not true. I had nothing to do with it.
Robert, believe! Oh, it is true. His hate drove your father to his death.
Lorraine, is it true? If I die, will this give you peace?
Yes! I promise that the line of Wells dies, I will have no need for her agonies.
Then I shall.
No! Father, your hate gave you the power to hold me. Now my love gives me the power to destroy you.
No! I must have my revenge.
I love you, Robert!
Lorraine! No, you must die!
No.
She's gone, Robert. Perhaps now she has her peace.
Yes. Yes. Perhaps her love has destroyed his hate.
I'm Rod Serling. Close your eyes, exercise your imagination, and join us again on our next presentation of The Zero Hour.
The Ghost of the Black Plague is an original radio drama written by Keith Walker. Monty Markham was heard as Robert Wells. Featured in the cast were Peggy Walton, Ben Wright, Parley Bear, Rhoda Williams, and Dawes Butler. Zero Hour, created by J.M. Collis. Directed by Don Hills, is produced in Hollywood for the Mutual Broadcasting System of Radio Productions Incorporated. Music is composed and conducted by Stanley D. Hoffman. Rochelle Sherman, associate producer. This has been a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents I Love the Mystery. And Morse adventure thriller,
it is unfortunate you chose this boxcar.
Why?
Because this car is occupied by the maestro and myself.
That's all right. You won't bother us.
But you bother us.
Did you say the maestro?
I did.
You mean there's somebody else in this here freight car besides you?
The maestro, yes.
A man?
A very great man.
Well, what's a very great man doing riding in a boxcar?
Yeah, and what about you? You a female hobo?
That is insult.
Well, why is it? Most folks that grab rides on freight trains is bindle stiff.
I am not bindle stiff, I will have you know.
Not, huh?
No. The maestro and I have temporary financial difficulties.
Financial difficulties, huh?
That is true.
Yeah, but see here, where is this maestro person?
Right now, he is asleep.
So you're out of cash, so you and the maestro are trying to get somewhere by freight, is that it?
Yes. Business is not good.
Well, just what is your business?
I am dancer. The maestro is great magician.
Magician? You mean one of them fellers that pulls rabbits out of a hat?
Oh, pull rabbits out of hats.
Well, does he or don't he?
The maestro don't pull rabbits out of hats. He is great man, I tell you.
The maestro, your husband?
My husband?
Yeah, are you and him married?
That is preposterous.
Oh, it is?
The maestro is not married to any woman. What kind of a man do you think the maestro is?
That's what we're trying to find out.
That is what many people try to find out, what kind of man is maestro. But nobody ever has.
You been with him long?
2 or 3 years, I don't know.
You been tagging that maestro around for 2 or 3 years and you ain't married to him?
I most certainly am not. That is insult to the maestro.
Oh, you think you ain't good enough for him?
No woman is good enough for the maestro. I am best woman there is, and even I am not good enough for
him. I say, he must be quite a chappy. Well, how about us striking a couple of matches and having a look at
you? No, you do not light matches.
Uh-huh. Why not?
Because it will disturb the maestro.
What's your name?
Nasha.
Nasha, huh?
You mind?
Who, me? No, it's okay by me.
Nasha. What is that, Russian?
No, I am not Russian.
Your dialect sounds Russian.
I am not Russian.
Nasha?
Aye, there is the maestro.
Nasha!
Yes, maestro.
Who are you talking to?
I do not know.
You don't know?
No, I do not know.
Well, find out.
Yes, I will. Who are you?
Well, my name is Jack Packard.
One is named Jack Packard.
I'm Doc Long.
One is named Doc Long.
And I'm Reggie York.
And one is Reggie York. That is all.
What are they doing in this boxcar?
I do not know.
Well, ask them.
What are you doing in this boxcar?
Just going for a ride.
The one named Jack Packard say they are going for a ride.
Tell them to get out.
Hey, who does he think he is?
He is the maestro. He say get out.
Well, tell him to take a jump at himself.
The one named Doc Long say, go take a jump at yourself.
What's that?
He say, go take a jump at yourself.
Oh, he did he?
Yes, that's what he said.
Apparently, he doesn't know who I am.
I guess he don't. Shall I stick a knife in him?
Oh, look here.
You do, and I'll wail the daylights out of you.
Then what I do?
You just shut up and let me go back to sleep.
The maestro is great man. He needs his sleep.
Hey, maestro.
Who said that?
I did. Come on out, be sociable.
Apparently, you don't know who I am.
Sure, you're the maestro. Come on up the doorway.
Very well, very well. Anything to make for peace and good feeling. Well?
How do you do? Care to sit down on the door and dangle your feet?
No, I would not care to dangle my feet, Nasha.
Maestro?
You bring that packing box.
Yes, maestro.
Nasha says there's three of you.
That's right. Doc here.
Hi, you maestro, old kid.
Reggie?
My pleasure, maestro.
And myself.
Tramps?
Hey, fella.
Do we sound like tramps?
The packing box, maestro. Will you be comfortable?
Certainly I will not be comfortable. When was a man ever comfortable seated on a packing case?
Your star has not risen yet, maestro. But it will. It will.
These men say they are not tramps.
They want to know if I am Bindlestiff. I am insulted.
Nasha Bindlestiff, eh?
Well, shucks, it is only naturally important folks don't ever ride around in a boxcar.
I beg your pardon.
Well, do they?
I am an important person. I am riding in a boxcar.
Important, huh? Nasha here said you were a two-bit magician.
I did no such thing say that. I said he is a great man.
And, gentlemen, she is right. I am a great man.
Don't mind admitting it yourself.
I do not.
I wish there was some light. I'd like to get a look at you two.
Why?
You sound like a pair of phonies to me.
He say phonies. Shall I stick a knife in him?
I'll wear the tar out of you if you do.
He say phonies.
You are Mr. Packard?
That's right.
You think, Mr. Packard, you could tell whether we are phonies if you could see us?
Yes.
Perhaps you'd like us to describe ourselves.
Sure. We aren't doing anything in particular.
Nasha, describe yourself.
Yes. I am very beautiful. I am very exotic. My hair and eyes are black as night, and my mouth is red. I am straight and lithe. And my body is so flexible, I can stand straight and touch my forehead on my knees. Or I can bend backwards and touch my head to the floor. I am built like a young boy, but my legs are nicer. I am so proud of my legs, and I dance as no other girl can dance.
Ooh, we and hot dog.
You don't believe me.
Well, sure, I believe you. Only pretty soon I'm going to wake up and take another drag on the opium pipe.
It does sound a bit incongruous, doesn't it?
Marcia hasn't begun to tell you her accomplishments.
She says she's not Russian.
She is not. She is from one of the states close to the Russian frontier. Does she sound phony?
Well, you'll have to admit she's hard to believe. What about yourself?
My hair is silver gray. I'm extremely fat and ugly man. I'm neatly dressed, but shabby. I'm a sensualist, but I have strong, fine hands. I'm a magician, yes, but I'm more than a magician. I'm a student of philosophy, of mysticism, of higher ethics.
Are you a moral man?
I'm neither moral nor immoral.
I am unmoral.
I say, Maestro, what do you mean you're a student of mysticism?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you.
Well, do you mind explaining?
Yes, yes. Your lack of understanding would only convince you I am a charlatan.
Why are you on this freight train?
Why are you?
Circumstances.
Exactly, my friend, exactly. Circumstances.
Hey, look here. How do you and Nasha here happen to be traveling around together?
You're very curious about other people's affairs, aren't you?
Okay, I can take a hint.
On the other hand, I don't mind in the least telling you. We all need money from time to time to keep body and soul together. When finances are bad, I suffer the indignity of going on the stage to perform simple acts of magic before the public. Nasha is part of my paraphernalia.
Oh, I get it. She's the girl that you saw in Half and the girl that escaped from locked trunks, things like that.
And I dance. That is what I like to do best. Dance.
In other words, you're a common garden variety of magician with a lot of highfalutin ideas.
You're trying to insult me, Mr. Packard.
Perhaps.
Well, you won't succeed. When you talk in that manner, I consider you stupid. An intelligent man never pays attention to stupidity.
Thanks.
Well, if you're so doggone smart, go ahead and show us something.
Show you something?
Sure, if you're such a high muck-a-muck in this here mysticism stuff, go ahead and show us something.
That's a very dangerous thing to say, young man.
Yeah? Why?
Because I might do it.
Well, go ahead. What's holding you back?
Nasha.
Yes, Maestro.
Remove that cloak.
Yes, Maestro.
Have you done so?
Yes, Maestro.
Then lie down at my feet.
Yes, Maestro.
There. You cannot see the girl, but she's lying curled up at my feet. Nasha?
Yes, Maestro.
You are thinking only what I am thinking?
Yes, Maestro.
You are going to let me put this rawhide leash about your neck?
Yes.
I stroke your hair. Stroke your hair. Now it is no longer human hair. It is the hair of an animal. The mane of a tigress. The mane of a tigress. You are going to be a tigress. When I say so, you are going to be a tigress. You are a tigress.
Hey, Jack, it's snarling. Hey, look at its eyes. Look at its eyes. They're shining.
Shining in the dark.
That's enough, Nasha. Nasha, you're a woman.
I am so sleepy.
Sleep, Nasha. Sleep.
Doggone. I don't like it. I don't like it a bit.
Now she's asleep, gentlemen. She won't awaken. You don't need to lower your voices.
Boy, I darn near jumped clean out of this boxcar.
Well, Mr. Packard...
What do you think you were doing?
Just a very short visit into the realm of mysticism... A very short and unimportant visit.
And you want us to believe you turned that girl into an animal?
Why should you believe anything except what you heard and saw?
It was too dark in here to see anything.
But her eyes, Jack, I seen her eyes. They was blazing green and yellow in the dark.
I saw that.
And that horrible snarling.
Yes, I heard the snarling.
And you don't believe?
No, I don't believe.
You don't believe your eyes, you don't believe your ears... Would you believe your sense of touch?
I might.
We'll see. I clap my hands twice.
Hey, what was that?
A man has just been murdered.
Murdered? Here in this boxcar?
Nuts.
Mr. Packard, reach over here at my feet where Nasha was lying.
Well, sure. Why not?
What's that?
A man with a knife in his heart. You're touching the knife.
Yes. A man with a knife in his heart.
You believe?
Well, this isn't magic. It's murder.
The further transcribed adventures of Jack, Doc, and Reggie will come to you tomorrow at this same hour. I Love a Mystery, written and directed by Carlton E. Morse, comes to you Monday through Friday, featuring Russell Thorson as Jack, Jim Bowles as Doc Long, and Tony Randall as Reggie York. Frank McCarthy speaking.
KGBS.
AM FM.
Los Angeles.
I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to The Zero Hour. Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination. Today, Keith Walker's frightening voyage into the past. Lost in Time. Starring Joe Cavanaugh. In a Mutual Broadcasting System presentation of The Zero Hour.
Brought to you by the Ford Motor Company and Lazy Boy Recliners. This is The Zero Hour on Mutual Radio.
Hi, this is Jim Backus with a special announcement about an exciting Lazy Boy chair sale taking place at your Lazy Boy dealers now. Lazy Boy reclining chairs of your choice are available at unheard-of savings for a limited time only. Treat yourself and your family to a lifetime of comfort and beauty. Once you do, you'll wonder how you ever relax without one. Get America's comfort favorite, a Lazy Boy chair now. See your Lazy Boy dealer today. Run in there. He'll be glad to see you. Yes, he will. This is Jim Backus with news about the most comfortable experience of a lifetime. A Lazy Boy reclining chair. It's ideal for apartments, living rooms, dens, family rooms. Lazy Boy is as beautiful as it is comfortable. Available in any style you can imagine and in hundreds of decorator fabrics and vinyls. Make your favorite room a haven of gracious living. See your Lazy Boy dealer today. Hurry up. He's waiting. Run down there. Go. Yes, indeed.
There is an old saw that says writers of science fiction only predict a minute amount of what's to come. That man's great leaps forward in science far outstrip even the most imaginative predictions of the fiction prophets. Many writers have sought to penetrate the fabric of time, and many have suggested it would require energy sources unavailable to us. That may all be changed now. Modern lasers are the newest attempt of man to create massive energies equal to the sun. Would these be enough to open the door to time? Perhaps. But what then? If we traveled back in time, could we return? Join us now as we explore Keith Walker's prophetic anomaly, Lost in Time.
Oh, yeah, okay. Hello?
Jesse, it's Pete. You awake?
What time?
It happened, Jess, just like you thought.
You mean the pellet came back?
Yeah, I can't believe it. We're all stunned. You gotta get over here right away.
Well, hang up. You're slowing me down. Call Bill Hatley and have him meet us.
Right.
Got it. I can't believe it. Jesse, later.
Okay, Elmore, later. This had better be important, or you...
Bill, it's the biggest thing to happen in science since Edison yelled into his light bulb.
Pete, forget the jokes. Bill, let me show you what we think we've got. Now, you know we've been working on a form of laser fusion, and that it's our theory when you compress a pellet of neutronium to less than 1/5,000th its original size, you then get an incredible release of energy for a short period of time.
Dr. Latham, I'm only the money guy for this institute, not its chief scientist. Why tell me?
Because we wanted you to understand what we think we've got.
Come on, Bill. You can see a touch coming 5 miles away.
Oh, you know me so well.
Okay, Pete and I have been experimenting with an anomaly we've noticed in the progress. 3 days ago, we reset the glass lenses that control the beam. We used the computer to figure the angles of all 32 of them. It fed us erroneous information.
Oh, wait a minute. What do you mean erroneous information? You set the program a long time ago. How could it give you new figures?
Bill, when we set the angles, the computer figures in a couple of necessary variables, such as humidity and room temperature.
I see. Go on.
So that was the day the air conditioning had broken down.
Ah, Sylvia, come in.
Morning, Jesse, Bill.
I'm glad you came, Syl. I was filling Bill on the experiment.
Mm.
Now, when the air conditioning broke down, the humidity had climbed that day more than we allowed for in our calculations. It changed the curvature of the laser lenses just enough so that when we fired our burst, the deflection of the beam was infinitesimally off target. But it was enough.
Enough for
Here's
what?
Here's what happened. In the burst chamber, the pellet we were using disappeared.
How could that be? Wait a minute. Does that mean you managed to convert it into pure energy?
Well, that was our first thought. But then Pete remembered something that sent chills up our backs. Pete?
Right. 3 days before that experiment, I noticed that we had an extra pellet in the inventory. When I went to get Jess and show him, it somehow disappeared.
You mean it was there and then it wasn't there?
Right. Took about 5 minutes to get Jess, and when we looked again, it was gone.
The pellet we used in the experiment disappeared too, but it returned also. The mind blower is that it was gone exactly 5 minutes.
Gerd, if I'm listening right, what you're saying is that somehow the two incidents are related.
Right. Then yesterday, another pellet, how shall I put it, arrived. Yes, arrived. Stayed a minute and then vanished again.
That's when I almost had a stroke. It scared me to death.
Tonight, I had Pete run another burst with the identical lens alignments. The pellet disappeared for a minute and then reappeared, exactly the same as in the first experiment. Bill, we can send something material back in time.
Has anything else shown up in duplicate?
No. But all that means is we've changed our line of experimentation, or will change, depending on how you look at it.
All right. What can I do?
I want you to convince the board to allocate money for us to build a system 10 times as large.
10 times? What do you plan to do?
Simple, Bill. We plan to send a man back in time.
Dr. Latham is working on, so I'll let him bring you up to date. Jesse.
Thanks. First, our team, Pete Elmore and Sylvia Barber and myself, have been doing some basic research. We hope to find other time anomalies in the fusion experiments that the world has conducted in the last few years. We found something in particular that I'd like Pete to tell you about.
All of us remember the first hydrogen fusion bomb that the U.S. exploded in Aniwetok.
Yeah,
something happened that was kept a deep, dark secret by the Navy. It seems that a month before the blast, a cruiser patrolling the area recovered the body of a fisherman floating in the restricted waters. What makes this so unusual was that the man was covered with massive third-degree burns and was highly radioactive.
Please hold it down till Dr. Elmore finishes.
The discovery was immediately classified atomal. Yes, Dr. Ranger.
Pete, are you saying that this fisherman was killed by a bomb that wasn't scheduled to go off until a month later?
Exactly. He must have been fishing in the restricted waters when the bomb exploded, killing him, and at the same moment, thrust him back a month in time.
Amazing.
We think so, Dorothy. The energy was, of course, uncontrolled. Had it been focused, there's no telling how far back along the timeline he might have been carried.
Then that's what you plan to do now. Focus the energy with the new laser.
Yes. Also, we believe there'll be a sine curve here where, past a certain point, very little energy is needed to jump, say, 10 years or 200 years backward in time.
Jess?
Dr. Marlowe?
Putting a man back in time is one thing, and I'm as excited as you, but how are you going to bring him back again?
Sylvia?
We've discovered, Augustus, that reversing the energy field will return an object to the present. I say discovered because we have only constructed the problem on the computer, but that's the answer. The final proof lies with Jess.
What? You mean Jesse is going to be the one that travels back?
Right.
That's ridiculous.
With respect, sir, I am the only one fully familiar with a way to program the operational equipment.
Augustus, we have developed a circular laser generator that Jess will use for his return. Essentially, it works on the same principles that the linear laser does, but instead of lenses, we use special glass rods coming out of the central core where the energy source originates. Built into each are miniature light amplifiers that give us the controlled burst. The whole unit is the size of a travel bag and has the advantage of being calibrated to return our man to this time angle.
Wait a minute there. I don't much like the sound of that. What's a time angle?
That's the problem, Augustus. We believe that we can use the machine to send us back in time to within a decade of target.
Well, it sounds like using a shotgun to shoot down a barn.
True. But at this stage of the discovery, that still is a major achievement.
Well, still, that time angle you talk of, that means when you return, it would be any time in the next 10 years.
No. Again, I refer to the pellets. They both return to this moment in time. That is the moment we're living at now. We believe that when I activate the return, it will be to come back to this moment. If I stay away an hour, actually, I plan for that on the first try, then 1 hour after departure, I will return. At least we hope so.
All right, before we wrap this up, anybody got any last questions?
Yes. Yes, I'm aware that you've moved the apparatus to a building in Manhattan. Why?
We chose that building because it was built in 1880. It is essentially unchanged now, and that's our target decade.
1880?
Oh, all amazing. Right, okay, everybody, that's it. We'll keep you informed.
Jeff, best of luck. What time do you go?
Tomorrow night, 10 p.m. I know where I'm going, but there's still a nagging thought that I'll sail over the edge.
If this works like it's supposed to, Jess, you can make your next trip back to his time and reassure him in person.
Oh, isn't that a mind-boggler? Imagine lunch while Rome is burning.
I could be the seventh wife of Henry VIII.
Yes, or perhaps the early assassination of Adolf Hitler.
Oh, I never thought of what would happen, Jess, if we could prevent the Second World War, or a famine in India, or the Black Death.
I truly don't know, Sal. It's been suggested by science fiction writers many times that a single incident could change the entire course of history.
Yes, and with it, this experiment. Us, we might not be here if time were altered.
Well, before we change anything, much thinking would have to be done about the alternate futures. In any case, that's not our purpose tonight.
Evening, Jeff. Pete, Sal. I'm afraid I couldn't follow my own edict and stay away.
It's all right, Bill. Glad to have you.
9:50 p.m., Jess. You better change.
Already done, under my coverall.
Change?
Yes, I've got a complete 1880 suit on underneath. Our schedule calls for me to use my hour and the other time to assess exactly what period we've hit. Wouldn't do to walk around in 1976 clothing.
No, of course not.
Hey, I'll enter the capsule now.
Right. Bill, Sylvia, let's adjourn to the control room.
Good luck, Jeff.
Yeah.
Take care.
Can you hear me, Jess?
Roger. I'm ready. The portable generator is within the field.
Stand by. I'm coming to full power. Now. 10 seconds to burst power. 8, 7, 6. Alignment. 3, 2, 1. Burst.
My heavens. I don't know what to say.
Amazing, Pete. 1 minute he's sitting there, and the next.
He's 80 or 90 years into yesterday.
Pete, what's the time?
Sylvia, that's the ninth time you've asked. It's 1:10 a.m.
Oh, where is he?
I don't like it, Pete. The experiment called for him to return at 11 p.m. He's long overdue.
I know, but there's no telling what variables he ran into back then.
Look, forgive the negative thinking, but what if he doesn't return? Can we retrieve him?
Not without his help. He's got the time generator. Plus, there is no way to place him exactly in time.
Well, what if something happened to the generator? Could we send him another?
Same problem. We don't know where to send it. We could drop 100 in the decade, and still there'd be no way we could be sure it would reach him. All we can do is hope that he'll make it on his own.
Pete, Sylvia, sit down.
What's up, Bill?
It's been almost 2 months now since Jess made his trip, and I've been doing some hard thinking, as I'm sure you two have.
Sylvia hasn't left the lab.
I don't know what to make of it, Bill. I've run 100 different programs through the computer, and I still can't find an answer as to how to locate Jess.
Yes, well, I've got an idea. It's probably not a good one, but it's maybe a starting place. Why don't we check the library for the back issues of, say, 1880 to 1890?
Great idea, Bill. He may have tried to communicate to us in some way.
Okay, let's take our best shot.
How are you coming, Sil?
Exhausted. I've looked at so many papers, I'm getting newsprint on the eyeball.
Oh, I know. I've been covering 1887 through 1890. New York was worse then, I think, than it is today. Depression, political chicanery, fighting over the Western Territory.
So what's new? Well, this is the last one. December 31st of 1883. As soon as I finish this, it's home to a dark room. Oh, my... Pete, look at this.
What? Well, then, let me see. Oh, Pete. That's our Jesse.
Yeah.
Quick, get that copied. We got to find Bill.
Right.
I wouldn't believe it if I wasn't looking at it. Amazing.
I know. But since the fire didn't destroy the whole building, there was no reason to suspect. Here, let me read it. December 31st, 1883. Today, the newest skyscraper on the New York horizon was engulfed in flames. As the above picture shows, many people were able to escape the fire which consumed the four floors. For a short while, police held a Dr. Jess Latham.
That explains how he managed to get his picture taken.
However, the doctor was released after he satisfactorily explained his presence inside the burning structure. That must have been some explanation.
I got it, Bill!
Got what?
Bill had a sheer stroke of genius. He sent me over to the building owners. They confirmed that when the building was rebuilt in 1884, old man Palmer laid a new cornerstone.
Oh, bless the old traditions. So you think, Bill, that Jess may have left a message for us?
I don't know, but it's the way Jess would think. I can't see how else he might figure he could contact us.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go dig up a message from the past.
You sure this okay, Mr. Hapley?
I'm sure, Mr. Hunt. Please continue.
Sir, in some sort the hollow plates inside, the enlarged opening. Okay, sir, I feel something inside, a metal box.
Ah, pull it out, please. Thanks, Mr. Hunt. Would you please see that that is repaired?
Yes, sir.
I'm almost afraid to open it.
I'm not here. Let me. It's hard to believe we are looking 91 years into the past. There's some papers here. Look, very, very yellowed. Wait, here, it's here. Jess did it.
Let me see. That's terrific. Bill, you read it. I'm too nervous.
Yes. To my dearest colleagues, if you are reading this, it means you know most of the story. My arrival was without incident. One moment I was watching Pete, Sylvia, and Bill through the glass, and the next I found myself in a deserted storeroom of the building.
What we fail to take into consideration is that the mass of heat generated by the laser reached this end. Before I could do anything, the room was on fire, and I had to abandon the time generator. So now I am trapped down time. The picture in the paper I arranged, hoping that you would research the period, although it nearly got me caught. As to my return, I have worked out a possible solution. Pete, I hope you're reading this, because if you are, you'll remember my cabin in Vermont where we fish. I have traveled to that area. It took almost a month, and it stands unclaimed in this time. It is my thought that you should move the laser to that area and transfer a new time generator to me. As we have discovered, we can hit a decade, but no closer. So it could take as much as 10 years before I am able to return. If at all. Nevertheless, I will travel to that area roughly every 2 months in hopes that you are successful. So, until we meet again, I'm yours most respectfully, Jesse Latham, the 2nd of February in the year of our Lord, 1884.
Rod Serling, close your eyes, exercise your imagination, and join us again on our next presentation of Zero Hour.
Lost in Time is an original radio drama written by Keith Walker. Joe Campanella was heard as Jesse Latham. Featured in the cast, Charles Aitman, Peggy Walton, Richard Peel, Alice Reinhart, and Herb Vigran. Zero Hour, created by J.M. Kolos, directed by Don Hills, is produced in Hollywood for the Mutual Broadcasting System by Radio Productions Incorporated. Music composed and conducted by Stanley D. Hoffman, Rossell Sherman, associate producer. This has been a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Hear the Zero Hour Monday through Friday at 6:30. Check it. Make it 7:30 over KGBS in Los Angeles. Stay tuned now for the final report.
Now, from the makers of Cold Water Omo,
London, Harley Street. A gleaming Rolls Royce, driven by an immaculately uniformed chauffeur, glides silently past the consulting rooms of H.R. Camrose, FRCS. Nothing very unusual in this, you might say. London has more Rolls Royce cars than any capital in the world, and Harley Street more than its fair share of them. But there is something strange about the occupant in the back seat of this car. He is resplendently dressed as a postman. The car turns a corner and stops. Postman gets out, walks quickly round to the main entrance to the consulting rooms, and slips a cream envelope through the letterbox. But then he returns to the car and is driven away. Janice, an attractive receptionist, seeing the envelope on the doormat, picks it up.
H.R. Camrose, FRCS. Oh, what a strange time for the post to arrive. And only one letter. Ah, well.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 1 of this story, in which John Steed and Emma Peel are handed an assignment which is not to be sneezed at. Ralph Camrose, as he was known to his friends, had the quiet manner of a seasoned surgeon. A large, distinguished man, he was one of the top specialists in the country. His calm authority gave every one of his patients confidence. On this particular occasion, he was examining the nose and throat of quite an old friend, Jules Farage, a well-known tenor.
Open a little wider.
Nothing wrong.
Oh? I think you'll live. Yes, looks all clear now.
Are you sure?
Can you afford to pay my fee and question my diagnosis?
I can't afford to lose my voice in the middle of La Traviata.
No worry. I'll guarantee your ability to reach the top notes. Now, come in.
A letter for you, Mr. Cameron.
Just put it down there, will you? Now, Jules, I have this prescription for you. There. There you are. Take some of that if there's any signs of reinfection.
Thanks, Ralph. I'm very grateful.
And see that you make good use of your new voice. I'm coming with a small party to the garden on Saturday night.
I shall sing better than I have ever done. Thank you.
Show Signor Farage out, Sir Janice.
Yes, Doctor.
Before he gives us an audition.
Oh, no. You have to pay, and pay the top prices to hear Farage sing. I go.
This way, then.
As the door closed behind them, Ralph Camrose picked up the envelope Janice left on his desk. It had his name and address neatly and correctly typed upon it. Picking up a paper knife, the specialist slit the top of the envelope. There was nothing inside. He held it upside down and shook it. Nothing came out. Camrose stared at the envelope with a puzzled expression, and then was suddenly seized by a most ferocious attack of sneezing. He began to clutch at his collar, gasping for breath. His eyes began to bulge. He tried to stand, panting for air, then slowly toppled forward over his desk, knocking over a table lamp. Janice, hearing the noise, hurried in from the reception room. But by the time she reached him, it was too late. H.R. Camrose, FRCS, was dead.
Nothing like a drive in the country, Steve.
Brush away the cobwebs, Mrs. Beale.
Break with the routine.
Commune with nature.
Streaming in the wind.
The trouble is that's not the only thing in the wind.
What else?
Trouble.
Speed, you've been holding back on me.
Oh, well, I told you this was a mystery tour. It's time to solve the mystery.
Well?
We've been summoned to the presence.
Whose?
Mother's.
Why?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, Mrs. Peel. But when Mother says at once, he means...
Sooner than that. Right. Then if Mother's going to put his foot down, you better put yours down on that accelerator, don't you think, Steve?
Mother's rooms in top security were austere to the point of bareness. Everything was on a level with his wheelchair, including five different colored telephones. He came straight to the point, holding out a scroll to Steed and motioning to Emma Peel to take a seat.
Well, what do you make of that, Steed? Came off the telex from New York this morning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what an upset.
Eh? Los Angeles Rams 24, Green Bay Packers 19.
Not the football results. Halfway down.
Oh. Third ear, nose, and throat specialist dies of unknown causes. Growing concern at the World Clinics. Not our territory, surely, Mother?
It is now. Look at the headline.
Death of Henry Camrose, famous ENT man, expires in consulting room in Harley Street.
Is there a worldwide epidemic, Mother?
Well, a disease that chooses its victims too carefully for my liking. Find the antidote before it spreads. That's your job.
First of all, find the disease.
Precisely. And it won't be in any medical dictionary.
How can you be sure?
My nose is twitching. Right. That's your job. Get going and let me do mine. Yes? Mm-hmm. Working on it. John Steed and Emma Peel. They've been on the case for a full 30 seconds flat. Yes. There should be a breakthrough any minute. Bye. Well, don't just stand there. Get going.
It's never let us down yet.
What?
Mother's nose.
It doesn't seem to have picked up much of a scent.
Ah, well, that's our department. I'll see what I can pick up in Camrose's consulting room.
And what about me as the female species?
Well, you can visit an old friend of mine, name of Padley. He's another of these ear, nose, and throat specialists. Ask him if he knows any common denominator that links the dead men.
Padley, hmm?
That's right. In the book. I'll be in Harley Street if you want me. Meet for lunch, right?
Right.
Nothing's been touched?
No, Mr. Steed. I received instructions to leave everything as it was.
Good. Body slumped here. This envelope is in his right hand, eh? Curious. Stamp has no postmark over it. Nothing inside? No letter?
No.
Waste paper basket?
There.
Nothing. Curious shaped envelope. Ordinary paper won't fold up to fit it. Did you happen to see who delivered this?
Well, the postman, I imagine. Although it wasn't the time of a regular delivery. I found it on the doormat.
Special delivery, eh? Right. Recapitulating. Nothing in this room has been removed or destroyed. And Mr. Camrose received this envelope just before his death. Nothing in this room, on this desk, appears to have come from this envelope. And indeed, nothing fits it.
Apparently not.
So we're left with one inevitable conclusion.
Well, the envelope was empty when it arrived.
Whoever sent it must have been very absent-minded. I think I'll hold on to this. Thank you, Janice.
Mrs. Peel, meanwhile, had found the address of Mr. Padley. His consulting rooms were the type that were shared with other doctors. The board, just outside the reception, informed her that of Padley, Seaton, and Herrick, Mr. Seaton and Mr. Herrick were out, but Mr. Padley was in.
Mr. Padley won't keep you long, Mrs. Peel. Thank you. But if you care to take a seat, their magazine, thank you.
Mrs. Peel moved idly over to the window and looked down into the busy street. She was just too late to notice a gleaming Rolls-Royce glide up some 100 yards away and park at the curbside. Some minutes later, a postman walked swiftly up the steps to Padley, Seaton and Herrick and dropped a cream envelope into the letterbox. It was curious that on the way down, he passed another postman going up. The second postman removed his cap and scratched his head in amazement. Then he sorted his mail and pushed it through the letterbox. Mrs. Peel, who'd seen the first cream envelope drop to the mat, was puzzled to see a second delivery in so short a time. The receptionist, gathering the letters up, started to sort them out, taking the ones for Mr. Padley into his office.
Oh, the post. Thank you, Georgina. Anyone waiting?
Mrs. Peel.
Ah, yes, John Steed's friend, yes. Let me just clear a little of this paperwork. I'll ring you to show her in. Thank you.
Very good, Mr. Padley.
Padley turned to the pile of letters. He started to open a few. They were mostly bills and circulars. Then he noticed the curious cream envelope with no date stamp. He picked up a paper knife and inserted it under the flap. Mrs. Peel and the receptionist, waiting quietly outside, heard a succession of very loud sneezes.
Good gracious, Mr. Padley must have a sudden cold.
Suddenly, the door was flung open. Emma Peel rushed to his aid, but again, too late. Padley died in exactly the same way as Camrose. Mrs. Peel, kneeling beside the body, slowly extracted the cream envelope from his lifeless hand.
Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Feed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omo.
Looking out for your part, you learn boots nuts that a bag of you chew. Like my daddy told, when you go out the cold, you're not down there to take in the view. You keep respect for the mind, concentrate all the time. Of course, beech nuts that a bag of you chew. What makes beech nuts such a traditional favorite? It's cause beech nut just keeps on getting better. It's a moister, more satisfying chew. Next time you're buying chewing tobacco, try beech nut. You won't be disappointed. Then when your shift's done, you come back to the sun. You and the boys hoist a few. It ain't such a bad life. She ain't such a bad wife. You got your beech nut tobacco to chew.
I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to The Zero Hour. Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination. Today, Kim Weisskopf's sidelong glance at a small town entanglement. Mind of the Beholder. Starring Lyle Wagoner. In a Mutual Broadcasting System presentation of The Zero Hour.
Brought to you by the Ford Motor Company, Beechnut Chewing Tobacco, Shenley Industries, Matouche Wine, and Kodak. This is The Zero Hour on Mutual Radio.
¶¶
can't go home again is a well-worn phrase, but apt nonetheless. Ellen White had left her hometown several years ago to seek fame and fortune, and now she returns to find her own town has turned against her. Why should this be? All she's done is change her name and become a movie star. Now she's called Bernadette Blue. Our story is called Mind of the Beholder.
Are we going to let these immoral smut peddlers find a home in Middle Point?
No!
We're all regular, clean-minded folks with kids to raise. And we don't want no dirty-moving pictures, do we?
No!
Just because she's new up here doesn't mean that Bernadette Blue is still welcome. Am I right?
Sheriff Peters, you've got to do something or we're going to have a riot on our hands.
No, don't worry, Smiley. I'm here to protect the people, even if it's only from themselves.
Can't you do something about this insensible fella? Everything was fine till he come to town picking up a fuss about what I show in my movie house. Now folks is all riled up looking for a fight.
There ain't going to be no fighting as long as I'm sheriff, I can tell you that.
I say when she gets here, we run her right out of town. Yes. We don't want her or her kind.
That'll be enough of that. That'll be enough of that. All right, hold it down. That's all quiet, everybody. This meeting's over. You can't take the law into your own hands.
Then, Sheriff, do your job.
That's what I am doing. Mr. Sensiball, you've got an illegal rally going on here. Now, either you break it up or you're going to jail.
You can't do that.
Folks, go on home. We can't act like vigilantes just because somebody you may not like comes to town. If you want to have a meeting, have one. But not on the streets. That's what town hall is for. Now, come morning, you can have your meeting.
Here they come. Oh, there he is. There they are.
Get back. Get back, everyone.
Hey, you
Oh, it's so good to be home.
Clear the way. Miss Blue, get in the
wagon. Yeah, let me through here. Sheriff, I'm Manny Tucker.
Well, get in the wagon. Go home, everyone.
Thank you all for coming.
Well, what about the limousine?
Oh, the chauffeur will follow. Manny, what do you think of my hometown?
I think we're crazy to come here if you really want to know.
I'm Sheriff Peters. Folks were a little excited back there. We ain't used to having celebrities in Middle Point.
Yeah, well, if I'd known there was going to be a lynch mob, I'd have brought along a camera crew.
Well, you were kind of that, Manny.
You'll be staying at the hotel, I take it?
No, we're planning on staying with my folks.
Oh, well, Mr. and Mrs. Whitehead are out of town just now.
But they knew I was coming. I wrote to them.
Well, they thought it might be best to take a short vacation, and that's why...
They're ashamed of me.
No, not ashamed, exactly.
No matter. I still have my house key. Go ahead, Manny. Offer.
Are you putting me on?
No.
Well, I guess that's it. Your luggage's on the porch. What's this?
Oh, don't tell me you've never seen a $20 bill, keep it.
For what?
Oh, don't force a man.
Well, I give it to him.
No, I can't take that. People might get the wrong idea.
Well, I'm going inside. Harvey!
He's such a rich man, he's the worst cheapskate I've ever seen. The chauffeur makes more than some of the actors.
Well, Miss Blue, I hope you enjoy your stay in Middle Point. I'd best be getting on back.
Wait. Aren't you Al Peters? Didn't you have a kid brother, Paul? We went to high school together. I was little Ellen Whitehead then. You look a little like Paul.
Yeah, Paul's dead. He got killed overseas.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Here, take it. If I have to put it in your pocket, I will.
No, I'll take it.
Good. I'm glad. We'll be coming to town tomorrow to see the sights. Manny has to meet with a picture show man anyway. Maybe I'll drop in and see you.
Well,
I'll do it first thing. Night, Sheriff. Yeah?
You mind if I ask you something kind of personal?
Oh, feel free.
Well, all those things you do in your movies, you don't really... I mean, it's fake, isn't it?
No, Sheriff, it's real. Every frame.
Oh,
Good night.
Yeah. Good night.
Our next speaker came all the way from Portland, where she's spokeswoman for a group called Women Against Salacious Pornography, or WASP. Let's welcome Ms. Constance Griffith. Hey,
thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be... it's good to be here.
When Mr. Sensabaugh contacted my organization, I knew I had to come here to your town to raise the real issue that's at stake in this onslaught of degeneracy and breakdown of our basic moral fiber. Now that, of course, is a blatant and utter exploitation of women in these films. The men who make these movies cater exclusively to other men. Men's fantasies, men's ideas of women's fantasies. And it is these men, in pursuit of the almighty dollar, who perpetuate the attitude in this society that women are merely toys to be played with. It is my firm belief that if women throughout the country would take a united stand...
I think you're missing the point here.
I'm not finished.
Yes, you are.
Just who do you think you are?
Please, do this my way. Look at your audience. They don't know what you're talking about. You've got to speak their language.
What? Talk about laundry detergent and rug cleaners?
Please, trust me.
Well, you invited me. Let me say what I have to say.
These people are like children. If you don't say what they want to hear, they'll tune you out. Look, I'm on your side.
Oh, the hell you are. You're as bad as the others. Why don't you wake up?
Ladies and gentlemen, we seem to be having a bit of a misunderstanding. Order! Our next speaker came all the way
you
from...
You can't cut me off like
all
that.
All the way from...
You sexist pig!
Lady, you're out of order. Our next speaker!
You know what you can do with that gavel!
Our next... Lady, sit down!
What's going on at town hall? You want to go see?
I don't think we should right now. Feelings have run a little high.
Oh, it's about me, isn't it?
Well, yes.
Does everyone in town feel the same way about me, about what I do?
Well, I can't speak for everybody.
How do you feel?
Who, me? Oh, I don't know. Seem like a nice enough gal. You sure are pretty, I can tell you that.
Well, that's not what I mean. I don't know what I mean. I just feel like a freak, that's all.
Now, hold on a minute.
I went to Hollywood to be in the movies. I always wanted that. You know, to be an actress. Well, now I am. I don't make that much money, but it's a lot more than I was making being a waitress.
Now, you don't have to explain.
I want to.
All right.
Well, it all started one night when a girlfriend of mine introduced me to men.
Have a seat, Mr. Tucker.
I thought maybe you'd have a bed in your office.
No. We're all business here.
Hey, you got a pretty full house downstairs for matinee.
Oh, yeah, it's like that all the time. Mill rats, you know. Most everybody around here works the trees one way or another, day and night. So I schedule my starting times according to when the shifts change.
Hey, that's smart.
That's business.
Right. That's the name of the game.
We were just about going under till you came along. You know, the other theater in town was getting all the big movies. Got some deal going with the distributor.
Distribution, that's the name of the game.
Uh-huh.
I make them, I know the market. Which theaters to book and ship out the prints.
Yeah.
You show them, people come, we make money, everyone's happy, right?
Yeah. At least everybody was till that Sensabaugh fella blew into town. He don't like us too much.
Sensabaugh? Well, T.S. for him.
Pardon?
Tough sledding.
Oh, yeah, I get it.
Hey, you know, Smiley, I think the two of us are going to have a long and prosperous association. Shoot, I got 10 more XXX features in the works right now.
No.
I got girls coming to me begging to break into movies.
Yeah?
Yeah, you heard of the casting couch, haven't you?
Yeah.
I may have to rent me a warehouse full of couches.
No refund.
It's me, your star. Is there any in there?
Oh, hi there, Sheriff. Miss Blue. Hey, come on in.
No refund. Oh, that's funny.
I'd offer you a seat, but we're all full up.
Maybe Mr. Tucker wouldn't mind standing.
No, I like it right where I am.
Well, here, sit here.
No, thank you. I won't be staying long. Manny? I got something to say to you.
No dialogue. The script says no dialogue.
Why don't you shut up and listen?
Oh, easy now, Sheriff. That badge don't give you the right to push people around.
Well, I'll take it off. You should be used to that.
Okay, lawman.
Hey, hold it.
Damn it. Won't anybody listen to me? Oh.
Oh. My lamp. She broke my lamp.
She wanted to tell you she's quitting.
So?
Tucker, I can't make you leave. You haven't broken any laws, so I can't jail you. You just finish up your important business with Smiley here and go on back to where you came from. Because I'll tell you one thing. My job is to protect everyone here in Middle Point, no matter who they are. And you're making my job awful hard.
Yeah?
This is Leo Whitehead.
Oh, yeah, Leo. Leo?
Sheriff, Elsie and me come home a little while ago. We had a change of heart, and we wanted to see Ellen, our little girl. We didn't know she's going to be here at the house. See, we found her in her bed, like she was sleeping. Only we can't wake her.
I'll get the doctor.
It's too late, Sheriff. Our little girl's cold. She's dead.
Smiley! Open up, it's Sheriff Peters!
Oh, come in. Come in. What's the trouble, Al? It's 6 a.m. I just got to bed.
Get dressed. Be at town hall in 30 minutes. I'm calling a meeting.
What's going on?
Where's Tucker?
How should I know?
Well, where is he? He's in a hotel somewhere.
Al, are you drunk?
Yeah, I'll find him myself. Now get going.
All right.
Open up. It's the sheriff. Sansabaugh, open this door.
Oh, what's the meaning of this? You got me out of bed.
Tucker, not you again. I heard you were around.
You boys acquainted?
Are you kidding? We toured together for years.
I wouldn't say toured. Debated is more like it.
You can call it what you like, Sansabaugh. If it wasn't for me, you'd be out of business.
If it wasn't for me, there'd be no one to stop you.
Oh, come on. Don't make me laugh.
I'm beginning to understand. Thank you. Now, I reckon just about everyone here knows me. If you don't, I'm Al Peters, Sheriff of Middle Point. I've lived here all my life, and I like it here. I ain't strayed far, but I know things are different in other parts. Well, lately, things have been different here, too. I'm sure all of you know that Smiley Grant over here has been showing new kinds of moving pictures in his theater. Now, some of you going to see him, some of you haven't. As long as Smiley's not letting in juveniles, people underage, he's not breaking any law. Folks either pay their money and watch, or they don't. Then Mr. Sensibaugh here comes to Middle Point and says Smiley shouldn't be allowed to show those movies at all. Now, Joe Baker, he shows movies, too, and has for a long time. All kinds, but mostly westerns and war movies. I lost my brother Paul in the war. I loved that boy. Last time I saw him, he had a hole in him big enough to drive a truck through. I don't go to war pictures no more. But Joe Baker can show them. That's the way I see it.
Oh, hey, it's that kind of talk that confuses people.
I'm not confused, Mr. Sensibaugh. You can sit down now. And you can stop clapping, Mr. Tucker, because you ain't going to like what I got to say. There's been a murder in Middle Point. Now, hold it down, everyone. Hold it down. I've been out to the Whitehead place an hour ago. Bernadette Blue was killed last night.
What?
That's right, Mr. Tucker.
Well, who killed her? Why aren't you out looking for the man who did it?
Because the killers are here, in this room.
Well, what you looking at me for?
Tucker, he did it.
No, Tucker didn't kill no one. He's been in town all night.
That's right, I got witnesses.
You have witnesses.
We're all witnesses to what happened.
Sheriff, speak English.
Be glad to. I had a talk with Ellen Whitehead yesterday. Seems like no one else cared about what she had to say. She told me how it was for her after she left Middle Point a few years back. She wanted to be an actress in Hollywood. A lot of girls have that dream, I guess. Well, Mr. Tucker here put Ellen Whitehead into the movies. He called her Bernadette Blue. You might say he took advantage of her.
Now, wait a minute, Sheriff. She came to me.
Then you paid her a fair wage, right?
She needed me, not the other way around.
She needed you, you needed him, he needed us, but who needed Bernadette Blue?
Well, so who killed her?
This is the murder weapon.
What is that?
A bottle of sleeping pills. Empty.
Well, she didn't get them from me.
They were hers.
Then you're saying that she killed herself? It wasn't Tucker?
I'm saying that it was Tucker.
What?
And you, and me, and everyone here. And still nobody seems to give a damn. Well, I'm through with my speech. If anyone's interested, the funeral's tomorrow. Mr. and Mrs. Whitehead might appreciate some of their neighbors coming. You all can decide that for yourselves.
Rod Serling. Close your eyes, exercise your imagination, and join us again on our next presentation of The Zero Hour.
Mind of the Beholder is an original radio drama by Kim Weisskopf. Lyle Waggoner was heard as Al Peters. Featured in the cast were Jane Webb, Jack Crucian, Frank Nelson, and Alan Bergman. Zero Hour, created by J.M. Colas, directed by Don Hills, is produced in Hollywood for the Mutual Broadcasting System of Radio Productions, Incorporated. Music is composed and conducted by Stanley D. Hoffman, Rochelle Sherman, associate producer. This has been a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.